And now we focus back on Grossman, who has all day and goes deep. Berrien down the middle. Hit in stride. Touchdown, Chicago. No flags. Hasselbeck had trouble with a snap. Briggs makes the play, and the Bears take over. It's third down and 10. Grossman steps up and hits Rashid Davis.
And Rex Grossman knew immediately where he was going with the football.
So officially 49 yards. Maynard gets it down. Gould wins it.
Must get to the 45 for a first down. Cutler fires downfield, and the catch is made by the tight end Greg Olsen for a Bears touchdown.
I tell you, that is a fantastic throw in these weather conditions.
Just runs by Lawyer Malloy right here.
He didn't even start the backpedal, Goose. He was caught flat-footed. He was expecting a curl or an in-route, and he just sat. And Greg Olsen ran right past him.
Now third down and 5. Empty backfield. Forte in the slot to the left. Butler will take it himself into the end zone for a Bears touchdown.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember this crap with Mike Donahue. Today we're remembering Bears and Seahawk crap in anticipation of the exciting game coming up on Sunday in Seattle against the mighty Seahawks, where they'll be playing outdoors. So as always, you can subscribe to this podcast at Disipio.com. You can subscribe to the Pointless Exercise newsletter at PointlessExercise.com. There's a sale until right after the first of the year, so you might as well sign up. They lied to me. They claimed they fixed the gift subscription thing. They didn't, and they apologized to me. Gift subscriptions are at full price, but honestly, I think that makes the gift even better. You can might as well spend an extra 30%. On the gift.
Shows how much you care.
It does. You can follow us on Instagram at instagram.com/pointlessexercise1. And somebody's going to win their choice of t-shirts from the Pointless Exercise Disipio shop. And there is a brand new shirt in the store, Mike. It's very exciting. Oh. I don't think anybody else is going to buy it. I made it and put it in there so that I could buy it for my grand nephew.
You have a niece and nephew that has reproduced.
Yes, he's a we love him like a full nephew. He's a step nephew. Him and his wife had a had a baby, and the baby is a little over one. And my brother-in-law is a Cardinal fan, and so is his son. And so you can buy a shirt, in toddler size, either 2T or 4T, that says, "My daddy and my grandpa make me root for the Cardinals." And that's the only Christmas present that kid's getting. So I hope hope his parents put him in the shirt, at least for a picture. So you can buy that shirt, too, if it applies to anyone in your life.
It's a great idea for a stocking stuffer.
Yeah, my wife asked if they have dog stuff in that shop. They don't, but I would think our dogs could probably wear a 2T.
Can we get a Lassie Edmonds? I forgot what number he wore for the Cubs.
He was good old 15, right? Just like he was with the Cardinals? I think he was.
I think that's right.
Yeah. I think they couldn't retire it for... was that Domingo Ramos? Was he 15?
Yes, it was in 1989. Boy, I can't think of any others that spring to mind.
Yeah, 15 is not a... Brandon Morrow later would wear 15.
A pitcher. I cannot think of any other 15.
It's weird. There are some numbers that just don't get worn much.
I can, however, recall a number 15 with the Bears, Mike Phipps, of course, who we went over last week.
Oh, of course. And Jim Miller.
And Jim Miller. Big Jim. Our Jim Miller. Yeah. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So the Bears and Seahawks rivalry does not go back that long because the Seahawks don't go back that long. They've played 18 times. However, since the turn of the century, the Bears have won 3 playoff games. 2 of them are against the Seattle Seahawks. Lovey only won 3 playoff games ever. He only won 2 playoff games against teams with winning records, and he only beat 1 team that wasn't the Seahawks.
Correct. The Seahawks if it wasn't for the Seahawks. I think of where we would derive our joy from.
So apparently Matt Hasselbeck at some point, I guess last year, must have been a color analyst for Adam Amin. Because during one of the games that Adam Amin was doing for Fox, Hasselbeck's name came up and he said something about how he was public enemy number one or something in Chicago. And he was referring to the fact that he had started 2 playoff games against the Bears. But Bears fans love Matt Hasselbeck because he lost both of them.
Right.
The only thing we're mad at him about is he blew that playoff game against the Packers with the Seahawks.
Correct. Yeah, otherwise he's on that mantle with Phil Simms and Dieter Brock and Tony Eason. That's another
honestly,
high.
That should be enough to keep Drew Brees out of the Hall of Fame.
They lost to the Bears.
Lost a playoff game to the Bears.
Daddy did.
Is that the only Hall of Fame quarterback that the Bears have beaten in the playoffs?
That the Bears have beaten in the playoffs?
I mean, if you go away, but if you count like NFL championship games as playoffs, then I'm sure they beat some.
Yeah, well, Sammy Bow would be one, and Y.A. Tittle, I guess, would be one. But, Joe Theismann's not in the Hall of Fame. Randall Cunningham is not in the Hall of Fame. And whoever their quarter, the Saints, because the Saints, like the Seahawks, are a team that the Bears.
Oh, Steve, we know it. We know. We know it was Steve Walsh.
Oh, that's right.
Remember, John Forcade had to come in and off the bench.
Yeah, I forgot. You forget the Bears and the Saints have actually played in the playoffs 3 times. The Saints are up there, but the fact that they're 2-for-2 against the Seahawks are the one of only 2 teams the Bears have played at least once in the playoffs and never lost to. The other one being the Minnesota Vikings, wherein Coach Dave Wannstedt led us to.
Why? But the series between the Bears and the Seahawks, they played 18 times. One of the teams has 11 wins. Which team do you think has 11 wins?
I gotta go with is it the Seahawks?
It's the Seahawks. That surprised me.
Yeah, I mean, they were an expansion team. I was always a little bit fascinated by the Seahawks because I knew that they were like this relatively new team. Like they'd come into the league with Tampa in 76, and we were, of course, familiar with Tampa because eventually they settled in the Bears division. That wasn't really how it started the first year, but they were divisional rivals, and we knew that they were woeful, and then suddenly they're in the conference title game. But then there's that other team in the AFC that was also kind of struggling in their early years until they also enjoyed some success early on. I think I saw where they played the Bears in 78. I don't remember that. I just remember two sort of annoying games in the Kingdom in 82 and 84. They played in 82 because both teams were playing last place schedules, and 84 was just the regular NFC Central, AFC West, because, of course, Seahawks were in the AFC back then. But, and of course, I made a reference to the 76 season where Tampa was not originally the Bears' division. I think Tampa came into the league as an AFC team, and I think Seattle was an NFC West or something. And then, so it's a weird sort of a migration for the franchise, if that's true. They started the NFC, then went to the AFC for 25 years, and then they've been back in the NFC for the last 18. Kind of a strange history.
Yeah, they moved back in 02.
Right after after realignment. That was realignment. Realignment was 02, yes. Because 2001 was the last season of the NFC Central and, you know, the Central, East, and West.
So who were the 02 teams?
So in 02, well, did they play? The Seahawks and Bears play each other? The Bears.
No, I mean, who came? One team came. Was it the
Texans?
Okay.
The Browns, the Browns unbalanced it when the, they pissed and moaned, and they got a team by themselves.
Right, because they added just an AFC team.
Yes, to satisfy Cleveland.
So then they added another AFC team, but then they kicked an AFC team out. Seattle always wanted to be in the NFC West anyway, because then they would get at least the 49ers, and then eventually the Rams came back, and they got the Rams too.
Right.
Less
that probably worked out. They never quite, outside of like an era that I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit of a brief early glory era in the early 80s, they didn't quite, probably because they were an expansion team, but, you know, those other four AFC West teams have had a very pretty healthy rivalry since the days of the AFL. You're talking about the Broncos, the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Chiefs. And that was, the Seahawks were sort of the fifth wheel in that division.
So I guess the only thing they saved, because there were two California teams in the AFC West, was the trip to Kansas City.
Right.
But when you're in Seattle, nothing's close.
No, there's no team in Portland. San Francisco's your closest city.
I mean, when they finally expanded 40 teams and they put that team in Minsk, then Seattle will finally have somebody close that they can fly to.
They just got to push a little boat off of the pier in Sarah Palin's backyard, and they'll be there in no time. So,
yeah, Minsk is on my mind because on Curb on Sunday, Larry dropped a very subtle Seinfeld reference.
A callback to Rochelle. Rochelle.
He didn't mention Rochelle, but he did say something about one girl's
journey from Milan to
Minsk. He said it, but he didn't say the name of the. Yeah.
Did he really? Yeah. Wow.
Kind of a nod and a wink. Well, on the show, he's a version of himself. Well, on the show, he is the Seinfeld creator. So
I've always described Curb Your Enthusiasm, and I love it. I don't have HBO, so I'm not current on it, but I've seen enough of it to form a cogent opinion. It is George Costanza distilled, what it is. It's like a concentrated version.
George was Larry.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the most famous Seinfeld things was when, remember the scene where George digs the eclair out of the garbage can? It's the whole one with it's a great one where they go to that other people's house, and he's been in the pool, and the door opens up, and the woman sees it behind the shrink. He screams about the shrinkage. That's was the also same. A scene where somebody throws an eclair away, but it's just sitting on the top. It isn't. It's on paper, and it's just sitting there, and George eats it right out of the garbage can. And when they did it, somebody on the set is like, "Well, we got to get rid of this. This is ridiculous. Nobody would do this." And Larry goes, "What do you mean nobody would do this? I've done it."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the horrible things
George did, Larry had already actually done.
Which is totally believable when you watch the set pieces on Curb, no doubt.
So anyway, I guess back to the Seahawks.
I guess. Yeah, the Jack Patera early Seahawks were really nothing, and you know, but they had we had a reference to Jim Zorn playing for the Packers a couple times in '85 against the Bears, and it was weird for us to see him because we sort of identified him with that. You know, the Seahawks kind of had cool colors. They were always an intriguing team. They played on the NBC network. You never really saw them because they weren't really that good. But Zorn racked up some pretty good seasons for that team. They kind of turned a corner, and when they started to turn a corner, They got rid of Zorn for the tiny-handed future Bear Dave Craig. I don't know. I don't remember how that worked out. If Zorn lost his job to injury, but Craig took them to an unlikely title game, I think, in '82 or '83, and then they were largely sort of, I guess, competitive through, you know, the '80s. But that was it until the modern era has surpassed it. But that was all that the Seahawks had in the first 20 some odd years.
So of course, Dave Craig. It's from Wisconsin.
From a college that doesn't exist anymore?
One of two NFLers to come from Milton College.
It sounds like something from Animal House.
And while Dave was playing in the NFL, Milton College ceased to exist. him and Dave Kravveld would have been teammates at Milton, and they both played in the NFL. Dave played for the Seahawks.
Wow, they had a pipeline.
Actually, Dave started off at UW Whitewater, couldn't hack it, went and transferred to Milton, and then ended up playing 12 games in the NFL in 1978.
So he must be a native Wisconsinite, huh? I'm guessing.
Dave Craig?
Unless somehow he got recruited to play Division III in America's Dairyland.
He's from Iola, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Which I honestly couldn't tell you. Where is Iola, Wisconsin?
Unlike Jim Zorn, Dave Craig was right-handed, so it was a little more normal. That's what made Jim Zorn stand out, that and the fact that he had a couple really good years thanks to Steve Largent. But just like how Jerry Rice transferred from Joe Montana to Steve Young, Largent enjoyed success with Jim Zorn as well as Dave Craig, which I think it's fair to probably look back and say, boy, Steve Largent was really damn good, because I'm not so sure about Jim Zorn and Dave Craig. We saw Dave Craig up close in 1996.
We did. So Iola, Wisconsin, for those people who are wondering, is located between Green Bay and Stevens Point, closer to Stevens Point. It's in beautiful, where is it? In Waupaca County. It's named after a Potawatomi girl. So there you go. Like, population in 2010 of 1,301.
Yeah.
Which I got to tell you is 200 more people than live in the town that I grew up near. So.
Oh, there you go. You can relate.
Yes. I didn't even grow up in the town. I grew up on a farm outside of the town. So did Dave, I would guess.
Sure.
I doubt
sure.
He was living in Iola.
Do you think if Dave Craig, what does he have to do if he needs to get his transcripts if the college is closed?
Sure. Must I don't be know. Some they probably
school that houses him.
I don't know where Milton was, but yeah, I would assume they just had to hand him over to the closest real college.
You mean the football program closed? No, the whole school closed. That's unfortunate.
No, Milton's in Rock County. I could walk there from
just
here.
Just over the border.
Yeah.
So down the road from Whitewater, then too.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that's probably where you go to get your transcript.
Nice. But it's not a public school. That wasn't part of the UW system.
No, but I would guess they made an arrangement with
some
registrar to keep things on file.
For sure.
Beloit would also be, like, you have to go to Beloit College to get Milton College's transcripts.
Well, there you go. The more you know.
Yeah. Just down 59 from Whitewater, Milton College. There you go. How exciting. So the Bears and the Seahawks first played in 1976. The Bears bludgeoned the Seahawks 34-7.
They'd have no excuse not to, since it was their first season.
They would then play in 78, 82, 84, and 87, and the Bears would lose them all.
Wow, I didn't know that. So the first victory was on opening day 1990. The mini Ditka Renaissance.
Yes.
So it would be okay. So let's unpack a couple of those real quick. 82 was McMahon's rookie year. They lost. The kingdom was loud. But 84, I only call that back for your benefit, because that's, of course, one of your earliest memories of a Bears quarterback. And that's, of course, the great Bob Avellini.
Get twitchy just thinking about it. Yeah, intercepted. A 20-14 loss, so it's all Avellini's fault.
And I think what's beautiful about it is that the moment that you sort of have in your head, just like my Vince Evans moment with a more positive thing, very may well have been the last pass that Bob Avellini ever threw. So I think there might, I don't know what that says or if that's fitting, but it feels fitting. 87, I was at this game and not realizing the Bears. Wait. Well, so the Bears beat him in 76 and they lost to him in 78, did you say? Yes. I know they lost in
88. Okay, so the game that I threw the tantrum in is 1978. And it's at Soldier Field, not in St. Louis.
Oh. I mean Seattle.
What did I say, St. Louis?
So Avellini did that.
Because that's the last time he played against that's the last time he played against the Seahawks.
No, but he played in 84, though. We unearthed that.
Oh, well, in the 84 box score here, he's not in it.
Are you sure?
But that would make more sense. Because I wouldn't, I would be way too young. Oh, you're wrong. I was looking at the wrong one. Yes, absolutely. Okay, you're right. And he threw a pick. He started.
Yeah, but he got benched, I think, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
You know, that was 84.
He got benched for Rusty Lish.
Yeah, Lish came in the game, and then eventually,
because otherwise, there was no way that was. I thought it's another thing. We're gonna unearth something later in the pod that I had misremembered.
Well, because I'm like you're pretty good, but I have 84. No memories prior to 79, so I'd be astonished if you, a year younger than me, would have remembered anything. I remember nothing from 78. So, but it is interesting that Bob Avellini had not one but two shitty games. Against an expansion team that wasn't even in his conference.
Yeah.
Or at least he threw interceptions.
He was really something. So
he was. So the 84 game, I think that was Ditka had another. Avellini, we joke about how he somehow manages to keep hanging around. He came in with that class in 75 when Jim Finks first got to town. And that Seahawks game, I'm pretty sure that was his last game, and I'm very sure that it's very possible that interception was the last pass he ever threw.
It looks like he threw the interception to Keith Simpson.
Wasn't Kenny Easley?
Who was one of two Seahawks to return an interception for a touchdown in the game.
Was Easley the other one?
Jackson caught a Rusty Lish pass and went 62 yards. Keith simply went 39 with Bob's. And the Bears were winning, and then Avellini threw the pick to Keith Simpson, and then I stormed.
See, that
out of
adds
the room.
Up. That adds up because the Bears were playing well, then they would win the division. This is the beginning.
Yeah. So.
That game too, where Franco Harris was on the, because at that point Peyton had not yet broken Jim Brown's all-time rushing record, and was neck and neck with Franco. And Jim Brown, of course, was openly lobbying for Peyton to break his record before Franco could. Franco was done. He'd spent his whole career with Pittsburgh and was standing on the Seattle sideline. He didn't do much, and he never did. I don't even think he ever approached Brown's record, even after Peyton.
Yeah, so in that game in 84, the Bears took a 7-0 lead on a Matsui pass from Walter Payton.
Love it.
weren't even, you know, like, all right, fine. Bob, don't, so you sit this one out. They get up 7-0. They don't score again until the fourth quarter when Seattle gets called for holding in their end zone, and it's a safety.
Oh, another safety. They seem to cover
that cut
a lot
the lead
of
to 31-9 when that happened.
Oof.
The Bears would lose that game 38-9. Yeah, the Bears were 3-0. Going into that game in the Kingdom, 3 o'clock CBS.
They bounced back once they got Steve Fuller to like prop up McMahon. That was all they needed to compete in 84. They already had the defense. The Packers game at the end of the year is hilarious. I stumbled across it once again on a YouTube rabbit hole dive where Ditka was so frustrated with the aforementioned Rusty Lish that he actually had Peyton take a series under center. And then they brought out the silver-haired Greg Landry. That's sort of a theme that reoccurs before and after the Super Bowl is the lack of depth at quarterback. It becomes more obvious many years later. But yeah, the 87 game, I got to go to, and it was Walter Payton's last regular season home game. It was very emotional. Even for a cynical 15-year-old kid, I was a bit, I remember being a bit verklempt. I was privileged to have seen so much of Payton's career on television and in person. But the thing is, what was really, what I think about this game too, is that I don't remember what Payton did. Nothing special. He didn't have a big year in 87. Anderson started to overtake him in carries, but it was one of the few positive plays that Brian Bosworth made late in the game to make a key tackle, I believe, to keep and the Bears frustratingly lost. I don't think Seattle was worth the damn much in 87. I think their little playoff sojourn had sort of died down. And
well, the win, they were 9-5 after the win.
Okay, I take it back. So they were tough, but still, the Bears were 2 years removed from a Super Bowl. They were in that pattern.
Yeah,
though,
the Bears came in
about
10-3.
Yeah, they're in. That was the strike season, so it'd only be a 15-game schedule. But the Bears had fallen into this pattern immediately after the Super Bowl, where they would dominate, or they'd always dominate the division. It'd always go 7-1 or 6-2. They'd always get off to a hot start, and then they'd always just limp into December with maybe throwing a few humiliating national TV losses in San Francisco, and it always ended up like 2-4, limping into the playoffs, and it was just really dispiriting that they lost that game. Yeah, Seattle was good, but the Bears should have been, taking charge. And they lost a close game. And I remember it as one of the few times that Brian Bosworth did anything that was worth a shit as a player. So,
yeah, so
that's all I got.
Payton ran 17 times for 79 yards. He scored 2 touchdowns, including one early in the fourth quarter to cut the lead to 6. And then, this is crazy, former Arena League star and grocery store employee Kurt Warner played running back for the Seahawks in this game for some reason, and he scored 2 touchdowns. God, I got to see the movie because I don't remember that. He also spelled his name with a C back then, and he was black.
Let's consider for a minute, folks, that Kurt Warner with a C, Penn State, played for Joe Paterno. He actually was a very good running back. I actually would never have guessed he was still in the league in 87. What I remember about Kurt Warner with a C is that it was like a Monday day game in 85. I think because the baseball playoffs ran into it for some reason. They have 2 Monday games now, but for some reason 85 is a day game before the actual Monday Night Football game to kick off. I'm pretty sure it's the 85 season. Kurt Warner was coming off a phenomenal, I think, a rookie year in 84. I could be wrong, but he's early into his career. But
he was a rookie in 83, and he only played one game in 84.
It
must have been hurt.
It was opening day. He blew out his knee on Monday. I don't know who's Seattle be playing. Oh, you don't have the game up. You just see the stat line. But I want to say that if it was 84 when the Royals and
the
Tigers
Browns
were playing. Okay, so I don't know why. I might have that wrong. Yeah, I might have that wrong about being.
Only 133-0.
He did blow out his knee, and the Seahawks were good. I mean, I identified that. I think they were coming off the. They were 2 years removed from a conference title game, so it looked like he was going to be a great running back, and that knee cut him down. So good for Kurt Warner of the C to come back and shove it up the Bears' hiney when he'd already had reconstructive surgery in '87. I didn't remember that, even though I was there.
Is Kurt Warner with a C the all-time leading rusher in Seattle Seahawks history?
Is he?
I'm asking you, is he?
No, it'd have to be Sean Alexander,
yeah,
I'm guessing.
Sean Alexander by a lot, by okay. More than 3,000 yards.
Okay. Is Warner second, though?
I'm
sorry to pepper you with these questions. I was just like kind of free association here with the Seattle. I can't really think of I guess Warner kind of was their piece. I mean, if he had stayed
Marshawn
healthy.
Marshawn is probably in there somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. But, had that
Chris Warren is number 2. Remember Chris Warren ran? He actually, how about this? Chris Warren is number 2 by 1 yard over Kurt Warner. And then Marshawn is 4th. And Russell Wilson is 5th. Russell Wilson's run for almost 5,000 yards.
There might be some diehard Seahawks fans somewhere arguing that in an alternate history where Kurt Warner doesn't blow out his knees, that the Seahawks maybe make a Super Bowl and then probably lose by 7 touchdowns.
I think, honestly, if you ask Kurt Warner, if he wants to change one event in his life, it wouldn't be blowing out his knee when he was a black running back. It would be warning his wife's parents that the tornado was about to hit the house or the trailer and kill them.
Right.
Yes.
What would he have told them? They didn't have a basement.
I don't know.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Drive to Ottumwa. I don't know. Go somewhere. Get out of the. I got a premonition. Get out of the trailer. Dig a ditch and get in it.
Yes. So the Seahawks, the Bears finally get another win on the Seahawks in 1990. And it was a very much of a relief because you'll remember, you know, between 1984 and 88, the Bears had a great run. They went to three title games. They won five divisions. They won a division every year. Yes, they only won one Super Bowl, but they played in three conference title games. They were a force. They were every bit, of a force as the Giants and Niners and Redskins were. But then 89 happened, and the wheels fell off the bus, and they crashed and missed the playoffs. So you didn't really know what to expect coming into 90s. It turned out there was like a little bit of a death rattle. Like they put together a couple more of those years where the Bears were getting off to great starts and then peter into December and then, you know, unceremoniously get bounced out of the playoffs. But the first sign that maybe we might be back, at least to that level, was when they shut out the Seahawks. I was a freshman at Northern. I made sure, as late as I might have been out the night before, I was always up at noon, as my neighbors on both sides could attest to. But Dave Craig was still with the Seahawks in 1990, but the Bears finally what? They win for the first time in 12 years against those Jagoffs.
They got them.
And then what's funny also then is that because the Seahawks, this was still pre-alignment, when if you finished last in a five-team division, you had a whole different schedule than everybody else. Seahawks must have been really bad in the playoffs because I don't think they played the Bears in 93 or 96, which is hilarious when you think that Dave Wannstedt was a coach of the Bears for 6 years. I guess he never would have coached against them. But
oh, poor Wanny. He missed it. Now, so in 99, the Seahawks handed Dick Geron his first career loss.
And it was Mike Holmgren's second ever game as a Seahawks coach.
So his first Seahawks win, because both teams were 1-1 afterwards.
And the Bears had them on the ropes. First of all, what I remember about this game is that you know, we've talked about how Geron comes to town and he hires space age Gary Croton, who introduces the wide receiver screen. They have all these receivers on the roster, and they jump out against an angry sort of like frustrated Gunther Cunningham in his first game as the Chiefs coach, and the trickery of Gary Croton and Shane Matthews and Cade McNown lead to a victory.
Of Gary
Cunningham is grumbling after the game about their rinky-dink high school plays, blah, blah, blah. And we all pointed and laughed at Gunther Cunningham. Meanwhile, Mike Holmgren, giant cock that he is, was like very slyly, you know, Holmgren also was famously on the rules committee, and he was starting to make some suggestions about Crouton's wide receiver screen and trying to plant the seed that the receivers need to look for I don't know if it was downfield or he was trying to kind of get in their head. He was trying to, you know, take the it was gamesmanship, and I call him a cock just because that's kind of the shtick. But
so now the NFL has a different rule on screen passes than college and high school. In both college and high school, at least in Illinois high school, your linemen can be as far downfield as they want as long as you throw the pass behind the line of scrimmage. In the NFL, they can only be 1 yard down the field at the time of the pass, no matter where it's thrown. Do we think that's what Holmgren either got enforced or they got that changed? Because honestly, it's bullshit.
I don't know if
it's
got a
terrible rule.
It's worth investigating. He was all over. It was a new – so I think, like, Kraut, to his credit, and people caught on to it, and the Bears didn't have the personnel to be, you know, to sustain the success. But they did – Kraut did introduce that wrinkle into the league, and teams at first didn't – you know, Gunther Cunningham didn't know how to defend it or whatever. And Holmgren, instead of worrying about defending it, started to suggest that it wasn't. So I don't know exactly how it ended up shaking out. It turned out not to really be a factor in that game. I don't think the officials made any calls that nullified any successful gains from that. I just remember that going in that, you know, Holmgren was trying to, you know, play a little gamesmanship. The game itself, the Bears were winning, I think.
Bears had the lead with
the ginger-haired Glenn Foley. Was he their Seattle quarterback?
He was.
Boston College
superstar.
Guy that,
and honestly, it was the Bears. A former Bear star wide receiver came back to haunt them. He caught a 49-yard touchdown pass from Glenn Foley with 7 minutes to go.
Was it Bobby Engram?
It was Fabian Bones.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, that's even worse. Because Fabian Bones hardly did anything with the Bears.
I think he hardly did anything with the Seahawks.
Well, he beat the Bears, which wasn't hard to do, of course. Yeah. So Holmgren again. You know, the guy who reversed the trend. Him and that redneck from Mississippi to sort of beat back the tide of Bears dominance in the early 90s. You got one more. But we'll get back to Holmgren. Don't worry.
So the next time we would play would be 2003.
First time that Seattle's back in the AFC, I believe. And this is
and
their new
stadium. What was at the time called Seahawks Stadium.
That's it? They didn't go with the corporate sponsor? They
well,
built
now
it?
It's like – now it changes like during the game. Sometimes
I will say that looks like a pretty cool stadium.
The 1-4 Bears against the 4-1 Seahawks.
And Bears played them tough, didn't they?
They did. So this would 03. This would have been
this Jaron's last year,
final year.
So Cordell was probably starting. I don't think Grossman didn't take snaps till the end of the year. He was the first round.
Oh no, this is even better. This is the what do you think? Oft concussed Bears quarterbacks.
Oh, Crystal Chandelier?
Yep, Chris Chandler, who was, when he was upright, was pretty good for the Bears. Problem was that didn't happen or last. He was 19 of 34 for 149 yards and 2 picks. So he didn't really help. Bobby Engram caught a touchdown pass for the Seahawks.
Wow, I was so close.
Stanley Pritchett had a 1-yard touchdown run for the Bears to tie it. Relatively late in the fourth quarter with just about 4 minutes to go.
I remember being in Michigan watching, not expecting that. Would you say the Seahawks were good, right? Or
yeah, they were 4-1.
Yeah. So not expecting the Bears to get blown out, and then they battled.
Bears leading rusher that day. Well, actually, the rushers for the Bears, it's a who's who of great Bears.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this.
The original Adrian Peterson, still in my mind the best Adrian Peterson, 16 for 55. Stanley Pritchett, 4 for 19. Brock Forsey, 1 for 5.
Okay.
Rabi Abdullah, not Rahib, Rabi.
Rabi Abdullah.
Rabi
right?
Abdullah, 3 carries for 4 yards, and Chandler, 4 for 4. How was that team 1-4 going into that game with all that talent? Woo.
Yeah. Well, that was Peanut and Briggs' rookie year, so good things would come on defense. Later that year, it was when Tillman would help knock Minnesota out of the playoffs by ripping that pass away from Randy Moss.
Leading receivers in the game for the Bears were Des White and David Terrell.
Oh, Jesus. They were still letting Terrell hang around 2 years after he proved to be a bust.
Then the next time they would play would be in the regular season in
Sunday
2006.
Night, I can just tell you right now, this was the same day that Andy McPhail, that the Chicago Tribune finally made my dreams come true and fired Andy McPhail. That happened on the same day as
October the 1st, 2006.
Yeah. Last day of the baseball season, I'm pretty sure. And they sent that sweater vest packing.
And the 3-0 Bears took on the 3-0 Seahawks.
This was actually the first day that I ever met longtime recipient Andrew Peck, who was still living in Indiana at the time. He became a Bears season ticket holder that year that the Bears had lived in Champaign. And said, "Well, if you folks from Indiana want to come to these games in Champaign, we'll give you an in for season tickets at the new Soldier Field." And he's had his tickets since, but he drove up for it. And I remember riding the train down when I learned that McPhail got canned, which was nice. And this was a good game. I feel like Tommy Harris was a monster in this game. I don't know if the stat sheet will show up, but this was kind of like the 84-85 ascension. The Bears were in the midst of one of the few sort of sustained periods. They'd won the division the year before, and they got disappointedly, upset at home to the Panthers. But they came right back in 06, not too dissimilar to 85. They had a chip on their shoulder a bit. And this was a great matchup coming in because Seattle was the defending conference champion. And it was a nice, warm, early fall night, and the Bears kicked its losses. That's all I remember. And I feel like Tommy Harris was a beast.
Yeah, the Bears won 37-6. Musim Muhammad caught a touchdown pass from Rex. Robbie Gold kicked three field goals. Thomas Jones had a touchdown run, two touchdown runs. And the Bears bludgeoned the
Bears
Seahawks.
Were clicking. In your face, Holmgren. And we're
so
not
bad
done
that
with you.
Mercifully, Holmgren had to take Matt Hasselbeck out and bring in the great Seneca Wallace to finish things up.
Wow.
Rex was 17-31 for 232 yards and two touchdowns.
Nice game, Rex. You hear that, haters? Yeah, what was the Bears' record after that? They undefeated, right?
4-0.
Yeah.
Were they off to Arizona?
That might have been
a couple of weeks later.
It was because that's my wife's birthday, October 16th, because we're at the
Paul
Simon show. So 2 weeks later, unless there was a bye in between.
But that's not the only time these two teams would play in this season.
Much like in '85, when the Bears played the Patriots twice.
On January 14th, a divisional playoff game of the the Seahawks. Were they 8-8?
Yeah, I think so. I'm pretty sure. Did they have to win a play? Did they have to? They would have been 9-8 if you look at it in Football Reference, because did they not have the Bears had the top seed?
Yes, they should have
in the conference. So Bears had a bye. So I think they're 8-8, and they'd probably 9-8 coming into the season.
Oh yes, of course, because this was the game after the Seahawks won. Oh, the Seahawks were they were 9-7. So they had a winning record going in. They played the Cowboys in the first round.
That's the Tony Romo game.
And it's the Tony Romo drops the snap game.
Remember it now. You actually brought this up recently.
Yeah.
And the Bears would have
played the Cowboys the next week, because the Cowboys were also 9-7.
Okay. Yeah. Good thing we played the Seahawks. It probably wouldn't have mattered. Bears were kind of destined at least to go so far that year. I was fortunate enough to be at this game. I was tailgating, and this kind of, I want to share this story because it just occurred to me. It's pretty funny. This is, this is basically an example of our friend Oleg being an up for anything guy. But I'm tailgating with my brother and a group of people. We're going to the game, and about 90 minutes before kickoff, my brother comes up to me and goes, "Hey, you know anybody that wants to go to this game?" He goes, "So one of their buddies apparently had a, let's just say, a long night, apparently, and it was so." You can only imagine, the variety of things that were ingested, but somehow they went to pick him up and could not get him out of the house.
Well, it was a noon kickoff, so.
It was a noon kickoff, right? And we're tailgating, so we're going to be in that lot at 9 o'clock. But now it's like 10:30, right? I mean, Soldier Field is already kind of inhospitable to get to anyway. And I'm thinking, well, you're asking me if I want somebody who wants a free ticket. I'm like, well, there's nobody that is going to be able to get down here and is willing to do it on such short notice. I'm like, except I'm going to make one phone call. So I call up Oleg and I say, Oleg, you're the only person that I would ever call about this. And he's like, what? Like, he thought maybe I was going to tell him somebody died or something. I go, I got an extra ticket if you can get down here. But if you can't get down here, I'm not waiting for, I'm like, you got to get down here like in an hour. And he lived on the north side. I don't know if he was like, I don't care if you take a cab or an L. It's, it's a little bit of a hassle to get all the way to that gate. I know you haven't been to a game in a long time, but I don't remember. I don't know how we did it, but I was waiting. I was waiting in the north end, and I'm looking at my watch, and it's like 11:20. And I'm holding the ticket, and just like a meteor out of the sky, I see this 5'3" ball of excitement ambling up from the Field Museum. He's the only person I would have called, because who the hell is going to be like, hey, it's 10:40. I'm already comfortably watching this game.
Yeah.
And then the seats are up at 400. He said later, I don't even know if he'd remember the details here, but apparently two rows behind him was Bill Murray sitting way up in the 400 section. So. Everyone liked that story after the game. Bill Murray sitting all the way up in the 400 section for the playoff game. So,
So it was the Bears were 13-3. They were 8.5-point favorites.
Wow. Yeah, they're the one seed, I guess. That seems a big number for a playoff game, but
they wouldn't cover.
They would not. They almost lost.
After Thomas Jones got them started on their first drive with a 9-yard touchdown run, the Seahawks scored early in the second quarter when one of the current hosts of CBS This Morning scored a touchdown. Was it Gail King or Nate Burleson? Because I don't know. I'm asking.
Nate Burleson, was he a former Viking by now? Do I have my years jumbled up, or is he yet to be a Viking? Did he start as a Viking?
That's a good question, because he played for the Vikings, the Lions, and the...
he played with the Lions, too.
Yeah, he finished with the Lions. He started with the Vikings, then he played...
He did, okay.
I think he had his... Did he have his best year for Seattle?
I'm just...
No, he had 1,000... He was a 1,000-yard receiver in 2004. He's most famous, even though he played 4 years with Detroit, what he's most famous with the Lions was he was driving home with a pizza on the passenger seat, and he had to slam on the brakes, and he reached over to save the pizza, and he somehow dislocated his shoulder. And he had to miss a game.
I don't know if I ever heard that.
Injured
before.
In a pizza accident. That was the only thing I knew Nate of for until he started hosting Good Morning Football.
Wow, so he's a pretty polished individual.
He's really good. Yeah. He's very good.
Well, and I'm just relieved that it wasn't another middling former Bears receiver that caught the touchdown for the Seahawks, because it was, you know, between Fabian Bones and Bobby Engram, it seemed to start to be a trend.
I wonder, did they have one that they could have thrown to?
Engram would have been gone.
No, Bobby Engram's still there. He caught three passes for 32 yards.
Oh, good for Bobby Engram. So he may have played on the Super Bowl team the year before. Happy. I always liked Bobby Engram.
Yeah, so the Bears, this was a back-and-forth game. So Nate's touchdown tied the game at 7, then Bernard Berrien caught a 68-yard bomb from Rex. Remember that was one where Bernard, I think...
He was on the ground.
The nitpicky way that they do things now, I'm sure they would have put the ball on the one and made the Bears run it in, but he kind of rolled into the end zone and they called it a touchdown.
Was that the one? Okay.
So that put the Bears up 14-7. Then Sean Alexander tied it. Then Thomas Jones put the Bears up 21-14. Then Josh Brown made a field goal to cut it to 21-17. Then this, and I had forgotten this because as I was rewatching the highlights of this, I forgot that the Seahawks took the lead. Sean Alexander scored, and they went up 24-21.
I've never forgotten it, only because I've always sort of felt myself compulsively defending Rex. Not that I was a big fan, but I always feel like the criticism was a bit outsized and overreactive. And I like to remind people the Bears were losing this game not only in the second half, but the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and, see, in my mind, the Seahawks tied it late on a field goal, but it was the opposite. Robbie Gould made a 41-yarder with 4 minutes to go.
Robbie Gould.
Barely. It was, but I'll count. You just have to get it through the big yellow Y and you're good.
I just real quick, I looked up Bobby Engram. I didn't realize he had a really nice long career with the frickin' Seahawks. And yeah, he did play with on their Super Bowl team. He caught 67 passes for him.
There you go.
And he caught six against Bill Cowher's defense in the Super Bowl. He actually played in 9 playoff games for the Seahawks. He had 35 career playoff receptions with 2 touchdowns.
So Rex in this game was 21 of 38 for 282 yards, a touchdown, and the interception he threw was a slant to Mohsin Mohamed that was going to be a touchdown, only Mohsin decided not to catch it, and it bounced off of his hands into the arms of a Seahawk. And I believe that was on a drive that the Seahawks scored a touchdown, meaning that Mohsin cost the Bears 14 points. Moose, nice job.
Backbreaker.
But the Seahawks won the toss in overtime.
And because Marty Morningwig was not coaching on the other sideline, it meant that they took the ball.
Yeah, they took it. And they, Sean Alexander ran for 10 yards. Then Maurice Morris lost 2 yards. Matt Hasselbeck.
By the way, folks, just so you know, in 2006, it's the old overtime rules. You can score on a 70-yard field goal, and that's it, on your first possession.
So the great Maurice Morris lost 2 yards. Matt Hasselbeck completed a 10-yard pass to Will Heller, but that set up a 3rd-and-2. And Matt Hasselbeck was incomplete, throwing for Jeremy Stevens. So Ryan Plackemeyer punted, and his punt was a doozy. It went 18 yards.
Okay.
Bears took over on the 34.
Real quick, I think you overlooked something before we got to overtime.
Oh, I'm sure I overlooked things.
Like the last few seconds of regulation?
Oh, that's right. We're going to talk about that. Yeah, I guess we'll do it now before. So I had always... this is the perils of being old. At some point, I remember to be mad at Lovey for this, but it had shifted from the end of the game to the end of the first half. Honestly, I think because I wanted to give him credit that he wouldn't be so dumb as to do this at the end of the game. And so when you and I were looking to prove this before we started, I couldn't find it, and I thought I completely remembered it wrong. And then I decided, well, what if he did it at the end of regulation? And he did.
Yes. And by the way, that's not you being old. That's just good old-fashioned Mandela effect. It happens to all of us. Somehow you got it memorized one way and it's stuck. But this is, you know, this is good that we kind of figured it out, because you're right. It was worse than you feared.
Yeah. So with a minute 38. So
After the Bears had tied the game, right?
Okay. So the Bears tie it with 4:28 to go. Seattle gets a possession and they get one first down, but then they have to No, they went for it. Actually, one of the other things that happened in this game on, I think, at least two occasions, maybe three, was Seattle going for it on fourth and short, and Lance Briggs tackling Sean Alexander for losses.
I do remember that. I remember
the Seahawks were the Seahawks had eight plays in the game where they needed either third or fourth down, where they needed fewer than 3 yards, and they didn't convert any of them.
It's incredible. And then Sean Alexander
Lance was the one making most of the tackles. Yeah, Sean Alexander was a great running back.
And he was at his peak, pretty much. He was still at his peak for as far as a running back is concerned. That's completely, you know, in my head, I kind of had this image, this recollection that there were a lot of stands. I had no idea it was that insane.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, Tank Johnson with the big fourth down or third down sack, which you're going to get to, I think. But that was only one of several. Just big stands by that defense.
Yeah, so that happens at the two-minute warning. It's fourth and one, and Sean Alexander runs for a two-yard loss. Lance with the tackle. The Bears take over on their own 46-yard line. So all they got to do is complete a couple of passes, kick a field goal, and get ready to play the Saints.
I will say, I don't recall that the game being that close to the Bears losing. If Alexander picks up that first down, the season's over.
Yeah, they're going to go down and kick a field goal.
And the clock's an issue, too.
Right.
So.
So the Bears get it back, and they go incomplete, three-yard pass, incomplete, punt, touchback. Thank you, Brad Maynard. So with 1:38 to go, so the Bears possess the ball for 21 seconds. Way to go.
Oh, you're back into overtime, right?
No, this is the end of the regulation.
After the Bears tied it.
The Bears tied it. Then Seattle had a possession where they had driven down and could have scored to basically win the game. But then they have the great play by Lance, so they turn it over on downs. Bears go three and out. Maynard's punting from his own 49, kicks it in the end zone. Now the Seattle has the ball with 1:38 to go, and they on second down, Sean Alexander gains 13 yards and for a first down. So Seattle uses their first timeout. Then he gains 11 yards.
Jesus.
Then one more. They call another timeout. They're at their own 45 with 54 seconds to go. Hasselbeck completes a pass for 8 yards to Jeremy Stevens. Then Sean Alexander runs for 2 more yards. They're at the 45 where Matt Hasselbeck spikes the ball on first down. So there's 30 seconds to go. They're on the Bears 45.
The Bears 45.
So they need about, you know, 10, 15 yards to realistically try a field goal.
Just 10, really. Yeah.
Hasselbeck misses Deion Branch on second down. And on third down, with 24 seconds to go, he is sacked by the great Tank Johnson for a loss of 9 yards. And
out of field goal range.
So the tackle happens with, like, what did we learn? 19 seconds to go. So now it's 4th and 19, and the clock ticks and ticks and ticks, and Troy Aikman and Joe Buck are doing the game. They're like, well, it looks like we're headed to overtime, and then they don't even notice right away. The clock stops at 2 seconds. They're still expecting the teams to walk off the field and to get ready for the coin toss, and the Bears' defense is standing in the field, and all of a sudden Brian Urlacher is yelling at the sideline.
Like, what the fuck?
The Seahawks are out of timeouts, but the clock stopped. Well, Lovey called timeout with 2 seconds to go.
Now, Lovey's thinking.
Lovey's thinking was, oh, we have Devin Hester. We should make them punt. The problem is when you wait until there's 2 seconds to go, Seattle can just run the last play. They don't need to punt. The worst thing that's going to happen to them probably is an interception. They just have to make sure they tackle somebody. The best thing that can happen to them most likely is a pass interference. They kick the field goal and they win the game.
Yeah.
If Lovey had called the timeout with, say, any time, 10 seconds or more.
Call it as soon as that play ends if you're really on top of it.
But even if he couldn't think of it right away, which just shows that he wasn't thinking ahead. But even if after a few seconds tick off, he's like, oh, let's do this. Waiting until there were 2 seconds to go, it's one of the worst coaching fuck-ups in NFL history. It's mind-boggling. If Matt Nagy did it, which he probably would, fans would come out of the stands and attack him.
It would have if what you alluded to being a hypothetical defensive pass interference on the play that Holmgren would run, and they lost. That would be talked about as just one of the all-time boners in Chicago sports history, no doubt about it.
Yeah,
it would still be talking about one Super Bowl appearance.
It's, he's Lovey. He's got the headset on. He might as well. He's Black Steve Bartman.
Oh,
he needs a turtle. He probably has a turtleneck on in the game too. So
right.
So anyway,
yeah, he would have been.
Hasselbeck gets pressured immediately. He throws a pass that goes out of bounds. It never had a chance of being completed.
It's rendered moot, but.
And we go to overtime. It's like, oh.
Yeah. I really forget. I knew it was a close game. I forget what a glass chew, what a grinder that fourth quarter was. Because like the Bears didn't tie it at the end. They tied it midway through the fourth. And then there's like this taffy pull. Two obviously good defenses. And,
Seattle had the ball twice in Bear
territory.
They
kept pushing it
right
around midfield too.
They got stopped at the Bears 44 on one drive and the 45 on the next.
Yeah.
So then the stuff we talked about. Seattle wins
really
the toss.
Great playoff game.
They get one first down, but then they have to punt. Their punter shanks it. The Bears get the ball on their own 34. And Cedric Benson runs for no yards. Rex throws an incomplete pass, but then Rex makes a great pass to an actual Arena League immortal.
Rashid
Davis.
Clutch. I loved Rashid.
For 30 yards, gets the Bears into Seattle territory. They are at they're at the 36. Cedric gains a yard, then he gains three more, then Rex throws an incomplete pass, trying to go to Rashid. And so Robbie Gould trots out for a 49-yarder. And he wins the game and sends the fans home in ecstasy.
First playoff victory since 1994, which at that point had been 12 seasons. Yeah, it was great.
First home playoff victory since what? The one against the snowball game against the Saints?
Yeah, 1990. Yeah, 16 seasons between home playoff.
Why do we root for this?
It's like, it's funny. Yeah, like what an oasis it was after the Ditka era. You get like that Wonstadt sort of, we thought we were going to be there in 94, and then like the Dick Duron burp in 01, and then this is really it, the next stop. They got knocked out at home the year before.
So this happened 14 years ago. Right.
This happened 15
January
years
of 07.
Yes. So
basically 15
years
in a few weeks. In 3 weeks.
Yeah. 15-year anniversary.
They've only won two home playoff games since. They've only won two playoff games since.
Correct. Since 1990. Yeah. They've only beaten the Seahawks and Vikings. Those are the only two teams they've beaten in the playoffs since George W. Bush's dad was president. So, yeah. Good times. But they won this day.
They did.
And they are going to be in their first NFC Conference Championship now for the first time in 18 seasons when they got thumped at home by the 49ers. But we're not talking about that because we already talked about the Saints because the Bears played them last year and we had much glory to revel. But did the Bears and Seahawks play again between this and the next playoff game? Surely they must have, right?
Well, that's a good question because, the NFL schedule makers wanted to do something. So for the third time in 13 months, they would square off, this time in Seattle.
Okay.
They were both first-place teams.
That's why they played each other in 06 because they're both first-place teams, but the NFC North would customarily play the NFC West like they're doing this year, right, because we're doing this. So it'd be every 3 years, 20, so 18, 15, 12, 9, or, right? 21, 18, 15, 12, No, they played them in 06, not because they both finished in first.
Yeah, it was probably
that was when their number was up, yeah, right?
They played in 07 because they were both first place teams.
Because even though the Seahawks were only 9-7, they won their division.
Yes.
So why don't I remember the 07 game?
I don't know, because the Bears lost.
Yeah, they lost a lot. They were alive. They were alive until late that year.
Yeah, they were 4-5 coming in. The Seahawks were 5-4. So evenly matched. Bears got off to a 10-0 lead on a Cedric Benson touchdown run and a Robbie Gould field goal.
Is this in Seattle or Chicago?
It's in Seattle. It's now called Quest Field, so they finally got their sponsor.
Good for them.
Then DJ Hackett caught a 19-yard touchdown pass from Matt Hasselbeck to make it 10-7. Maurice Morris had a 19-yard touchdown run to make it 14-10. Then the original Adrian Peterson had a 5-yard run to make it 17-14. Josh Brown tied it. We went at going to the half. Nate Burleson caught another touchdown pass against the Bears. And then so they made it 24-17, and then Robbie kicked a field goal, and then Josh Brown kicked two, and then Robbie kicked another one just with 13 seconds to go in the game to cut it to 7. So then I'm sure there was an onside kick. And
I got no recollection of that one.
It does not seem like a terribly memorable game.
So if that was the year they were supposed to play, then they would play again in 3 years. The next time that they would also play again in the playoffs. So both times the Bears played the Seahawks in the playoffs, they played them in the regular season, right? 2010?
They did, but they also played in 09.
Because they both finished in the same division spot.
That time the Bears went to Quest Field and won. They won 25-19.
That was Cutler's first year.
Oh, they were kicking against – they were playing against Alindo Mare.
Oh, he's been referenced before on this.
Former Bear great Alindo Mare.
Yes, I had forgotten he was a Bear.
Yeah, Jay, 21-27, threw 3 touchdown passes. He threw them to Greg Olson, Johnny Knox, and Devin Hester. And actually, the Bears were down 13-0 and came back to win 25-19. So there you go.
How about that? Yeah, Cutler, I think it was like a week after he came back against Pittsburgh, too. So a little bit of optimism early going. I don't remember that game, though. Got to admit, another one. Somehow I've got some Seattle blackouts going on. And I don't know if I remember the 2010 regular season. I should, though, because that's another fun season. Bears won the division.
Yeah, this one was in Soldiers Field. The Bears were 4-1 going in, and they lost 23-20.
Oh, I remember. All right. This was the back-to-back weeks. They played Seattle and Washington in back-to-back weeks. The Washington game was when Cutler got picked off 3 times by that guy in Washington.
D'Angelo Hall.
That's it.
Who ironically fills in once in a while for Nate Burleson now that Nate has left Good Morning Football.
Interesting.
Yes.
And I just remember that because there's a Seattle-Washington, and then on the Bears schedule, they played Seattle at home and then Washington home, and they lost them both, and it kind of represented the low point of the season before the Bears turned things around. I don't know if the Washington game was the week before or after, but it was just another – all I remember about is that Cutler's quarterback, it was just a dispiriting home loss. I don't know where the Bears were at that point in the season.
And actually, the D'Angelo Hall, it was even more impressive what he did, or maybe more mind-boggling what Jay did. It was 4 interceptions, and they were all in the same half.
Ooh.
How about that?
Yeah.
Jesus. I believe it's still an NFL record for most interceptions. It's certainly an NFL record for most interceptions in a half. I think it probably is for a game.
Yeah.
Oh, Jay. When Jay was good, and we're going to talk about good Jay here in a minute.
Yeah.
He was really good, and when he was bad, he was really bad, kind of like he is on his podcast.
Well, there you go. So he's sometimes good, actually?
No, he's just repugnant mostly now, but still.
Nah, I figured, but okay.
So the Bears lose the regular season game matchup to the Seahawks. The Seahawks were, they're just 3-2. So I guess it's not that weird then.
Is it early season? Yeah, the Bears were still riding the
I was going to say, it's not that weird then that as they get to the playoffs, the Seahawks came into the playoffs at least with a losing record.
Uh-huh. Which might have been the first time. No, I think it happened in 82 because of the strike, but yeah, not common, obviously.
So the first time in a real season.
And then they went out and won their playoff game when Marshawn went into beast mode.
Yes, that would have been the beast quake.
Crazy-ass run. Yes. Is that, yeah, they went, was that New Orleans or no?
They went 7-9 and they won the NFC West. Let's see. Let's see how the other teams did. In the, oh yeah, they had a tiebreaker against the Rams. Actually, so the division was 7-9, 7-9, 6-10, 5-11. So nobody was terrible, but everybody was kind of bad. Meanwhile, right. In the NFC North, the Bears won the division. They were 11-5. Green Bay was 10-6, and Detroit and Minnesota were both 6-10. The Bears were the second seed in the playoffs. So they had
Falcons were the first. Falcons were the first, and then of course the Falcons got upset by the Packers, whom the Bears had let into the playoffs.
Yes,
but then at least that's why the Bears hosted the championship game.
Yeah. And I believe we refuted by looking at that Bear game. The idea that the Bears didn't try to win the game against the Packers because they
Packers
played everybody.
At the end.
They played everybody in that game. So they tried. They just couldn't beat them.
Packers won it at the end. Packers had more incentive. That's all. The Bears beat,
But yes, it's bullshit because if the Bears win either of those games, that one of the NFC Championship game, Aaron Rodgers has never won a Super Bowl.
Correct. That's the only year Rodgers won it, so.
Should have a big shiny asterisk on it. Or asterisk. I love when people can't say asterisk.
Asterisk, right? So I know they played in 2012, but again, that must have been because they finished in the same spot in 2011 because they're supposed to play each other 7-10.
Yeah, they played in 11. Seattle won 38-14.
They did play. I mean, Seattle had suddenly become like a divisional opponent. They're playing every year.
Yeah,
now.
They played in.
Oh, so because they're division winners. That's why they played in 11.
Yeah, they played in 06. They played twice in 07. They played in 09. They played twice in 10. They played in 11 and 12 and 15 and 18. And now they're playing in 21.
Okay.
But the Bears lost. So we need to talk about the playoff game here. So
the second playoff game.
The second playoff game. The Pete Carroll version.
And I know that it's the most recent playoff win, but I can tell you, 10 facts about the Bears-Giants game in 85. All I can tell you that I can remember from this much more recent game is it was snowing, and Greg Olsen caught a beautiful pass from Jay Cutler early on.
So this was Jay Cutler's first playoff game. He had never played one in the NFL.
Right.
And what do you think he did on his very first pass?
Got intercepted?
No, he threw that 58-yard touchdown pass.
That was his first pass. I knew it was early in the game. I didn't know it was that early.
Greg Olsen had 113 yards receiving at the half.
Mm.
At which point, I was watching the highlights. It was NFL Network. It was actually Rich Eisen and Dion and whoever else yucking it up. And so when Olsen is they're showing him catching all these passes, Eisen makes a crack about how, gee, he's pretty good. He would actually think they would have thrown in the ball during the season. Because this, of course, was Mike Martz, offensive genius, who didn't want a tight end. In fact, after the season, he basically bullied the Bears into trading Greg, one of the worst decisions they've made.
As it turns out.
Because he's a borderline Hall of Famer. And he should have spent his whole career with the Bears instead of dicking around in Carolina.
He did get to a Super Bowl with Carolina, to his credit. But yeah, no, you're right.
And the so what did he finish the game with? I'm sure at halftime, Mike Martz made an adjustment. Stop throwing the ball to Greg Olsen.
So does Martz not get any credit for the 2010 Bears? They win in spite of him. Cutler was obviously talented.
And I wouldn't give Martz credit for shit. He was
okay.
His act had run its course. So we had 113 yards at the half. How many yards do you think he finished the game with?
119.
113. Did not catch a pass. Yeah. The Bears raced out to a 28-0 lead. They had the 58-yard touchdown pass to Olsen. Chester Taylor had a 1-yard touchdown run. And then Jay had two touchdown runs. The first one was a quarterback draw from the 6-yard line where he actually ran over somebody at the goal line. And it's funny because they talked about how it's ironic considering what happened a week later they talked on the broadcast about how, well, he's really athletic and he's really tough, so why wouldn't you, you know, sure, run that play? Where a week later, there were assholes like Maurice Jones-Drew, also who fills in for Nate Burleson sometimes on Good Morning Football, tweeting things about what a pussy Jay Cutler is.
And Maurice Jones-Drew, unironically, too, because I believe he was waylaid with some injury.
Well, then the next, I think the next season, he just missed a playoff game.
Well, that's what it was.
Yeah. Fuck him. I believe this was the early years of Twitter and me, and I believe I also tweeted something like, you know, how can he not try to play?
Right.
Turns out, of course, that he actually had. He had tried to play, he finished the half on one leg and could barely stand up, much less play. But all everybody remembers about that, we talked about this in the Packer one, was Jay being Jay, wearing the cape, and just standing, you know, looking completely bored on the sidelines.
Not that he should have, but he had no remote sense of optics, it seemed.
No, like I talked about it at the time. If that was Brett Favre, they would have literally, Brett would have made them carry him off the field on a stretcher.
You would have thought he was a Premier League player, yeah.
So anyway, so the Bears, and then Jay has another touchdown run. And so the Bears are up 28-0 with about 10 minutes to go in the third quarter. Like, whew, this is going to be easy.
Yeah, how long have you been a Bears fan?
And then the Seahawks kick a 30-yard field goal, and then Mike Williams.
The big guy that Detroit, one of the many
Matt Millen's first-round draft picks. Catches a two-yard touchdown pass from Matt Hasselbeck. That makes it 28-10, but don't worry. The other tight end, Kellen Davis, catches a 39-yard touchdown from Jay and dunks the ball over the goalpost.
Oh, that's right. Good memory.
Everything's going to be fine.
I always like Kellen Davis.
Seahawks have the ball with 2:16 to go. Hasselbeck throws a slant into the end zone, and Peanut Tillman is right there, and the ball bounces off of his hands up in the air to Mike Williams for a touchdown.
Mike Williams had two touchdowns in the
playoff game. Seahawks recover the onside kick.
I don't remember this.
And then, with 1:24 to go, Brandon Stokley catches a 9-yard touchdown pass from Matt Hasselbeck.
Right,
now it's 35-24.
It was 35-17 at one point, or 35-10 before the first score, but yeah.
Well, it's 28-0. And of course, the Bears end up winning 35-24 in a game they led 28-0. Brandon Stokley catches a 9-yard touchdown pass, and then Johnny Knox fields the final onside kick. And the Bears are off. Very fitting,
because I want to say Johnny Knox may factor into the next Bears-Seahawks game. But I don't know if that happened in 2011, or because you just edified me that they, again, because they kept landing in the same spot in their respective divisions, and right around the time that their divisions playing each other would turn up, they played each other so often, and they played in 2011 and 2012. I don't know which one of those is the Johnny Knox game. I think it was 2011, actually. Well,
before we get to the Johnny Knox game, we need to luxuriate in the Jay Cutler.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to hijack it. My bad.
Jay, 15 of 28 for 274 yards, two touchdowns. He ran eight times for 43 yards and two touchdowns.
That's a hell of a fucking game, man. It's
pretty good.
That's
for your NFL playoff debut.
It's one of your best playoff performances by a quarterback in Bears history. I'm just going to say that reflexively.
I believe, it was a game before. Yeah, in the 2006 game, the other Manning brother, not Cooper, Ricky, had an interception for the Bears.
Danny Eel? Okay, Ricky Manning.
No, Ricky Manning. And then this game you would have had Danielle, who actually, I think, had a, I believe he knocked, oh shit, who did he?
He knocked somebody out of the game?
Yes, early, like on maybe the first or second play. It was, hot shot rookie tight end John Carlson. Caught a pass for 14 yards, and Danielle Manning dumped him on his head on the sidelines, and Seattle had to play the rest of the game with a backup tight end.
John Carlson, one of like 20 like successful white tight ends out of Notre Dame, and of course it looks like the Bears get the one who's a complete apropos of nothing.
Yeah, they're getting the Anthony Fasano of
Fasano. I mean, you go back to Mark Bavaro, but there's like two or three more besides. They're not springing to mind, but there's
Notre Dame's tight end.
Yeah.
Even go back to Derek Brown and Irv Smith. Hell, Irv Smith Jr. is in the NFL now, for God's sakes. Wow. But yeah, there's John Carlson and Kyle Rudolph.
That's right. There's one more I know that I'm missing.
There's backups. Vintage. There are backup Notre Dame tight ends playing in the NFL. Holy crap, I kind of remember that guy.
Right. Or they might be the Matt Cassel type.
But now you shouldn't besmirch Cole Kmet. Cole caught like 6 or 7 passes on Monday night. And as I noted to Mike Pusateri, every time he caught the ball, it was like 3rd and 20, and he caught like a 5-yard pass. Do you think maybe the defense had backed up a little bit? Maybe.
Not like a Greg Olsen bursting, seam.
Can the Bears just trade him for Michael Mayer, the current Notre Dame tight end, who's freaking really good?
They might be able to do that.
Maybe nobody will notice. They just swap them.
You don't think Cole Kmet could, like break open on a seam?
Don't worry about it. Next year.
Like Greg Olsen did in this playoff game?
Next year when John Gruden comes in and puts in his offense,
Cole
Kmet is going to be fine.
Because what's his name? Waller turned into a good tight end.
Yeah. Or maybe, I don't know. And if they don't want to go with Gruden, then maybe they just go with Urban Meyer. There's lots of good coaches out there that they can get.
What are you trying to do?
Where's Bobby Petrino these days?
I just want to relive past Bears glory and peace. What are you doing?
Speaking of past Bears glory, I'm pretty sure Mark Trestman's still available. Could try
terrific.
That.
Yes, fire up that
try
great
that again. You could. Jaron is still alive, right?
And yeah, I'm too busy reveling in the only two playoff victories of the last 27 years, both against the same borderline 500 team from the West Coast.
You know the answer to our? And this is nothing like talking about the other podcast this week. But as I went through and tried to figure out, it, other than John Fox, if the Bears had ever hired a coach who'd been a head coach in the NFL before.
No, that was announced when Fox was hired.
He was the first one. Okay,
correct. Yeah,
I couldn't remember. I actually thought of another guy the other day. I'm like, oh, maybe it was that guy, but it wasn't.
Was it Luke Johnsos?
It wasn't Luke Johnsos.
Was it Dutch Sterneman?
It might have been. It probably was Dutch Sterneman.
Is it Ralph Jones?
Why wouldn't it have been?
He was a college coach, Ralph Jones, before he took over in 1934. Yeah, no, it was. In fact, until Jack Pardee, they had never hired a coach outside of their incestual fishbowl, because even whenever Halas would have to jump on a Navy cruiser, Anderson and Johnsos were still Bears, and Dutch Sterneman was still a Bear, and Paddy Driscoll, even though he was originally a Cardinal, still a Bear. And then when Halas finally retired for the last time, Jim Dooley and Abe Gibbon were Bears, and. So until Pardee, they never hired a non-Bear, and then until Fox, they never hired a guy that had been a coach with another NFL team.
So how did you like the NFL Films footage of the mascot mic'd up?
Dude, I made a comment on the Pointless Exercise.
I know you did. That was a regular season game at Dice.
It was a regular season game. No, characterizing that guy as Mike Norris' dad was absolutely perfect. Because
I'm pretty sure it probably was.
He kept saying. I kept thinking he was going to say fuck, but he kept saying, what was it that he kept saying? Like, forget about it.
Bleeped quite a few times, even.
Yeah.
Which is great to have your mascot swear. And he was, there were times, well, even Steve Sabol says in the thing, there was stuff they couldn't, like some of the stuff we saw, they couldn't use back then because he was literally criticizing Bears players during the game in his mascot outfit on the, he never left the Bears sidelines. He clearly, and how about the fact, actually the head is really cool. Like, that's a really good, but he had to pay for it himself.
I know. Yeah, Halas wasn't going to give him any.
And I love the fact that he kept calling Muggs Mr. Halas Jr.
Correct. Yes, Mr. Halas Jr.
Mr. Halas.
No, his expression was, I just had it on the tip of my tongue again. He said,
Pasta
come to
Fazool?
Me.
Is that what he was
saying? No, it wasn't forget about it, but it sounded like he was about to say fucking whatever. If it comes back to me, I'm going to bring it up because I kept laughing every time he'd said it. Oh, fuck crying out loud.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great.
Central casting, that guy. They don't make him like that anymore either. You could scour.
What did they say his full-time job was? He was a baggage handler at O'Hare.
He was a window washer at O'Hare, I thought. Yeah.
At O'Hare. Yeah, I remember he was at O'Hare. Oh, boy. Okay, so yeah, so the Bears won this game in 2010. They go on to the NFC Championship game where they beat the Packers, and then they go on to the Super Bowl to play the Steelers.
They beat the Steelers.
And they beat the Steelers, and Lovey got a contract extension, and Jerry Angelo became president, and Chris Ballard became the general manager, and the Bears have been really good ever since.
Thanks for reminding me that we had Chris Ballard.
It all worked out. Oh, it's the Chris Ballard thing is worse because they literally hired – Chris Ballard was the other guy that they interviewed when they hired Phil Emery.
Wow. Just like Bruce Arians was the other guy when they hired Mark Trestman.
Yep.
Just these missteps.
So all – I mean, think about how much different life is now as a Bear fan if within within that 1 week they hire Chris Ballard and Bruce Arians instead of Phil Emery and Mark Trestman.
Incredible. By the way, I can pretty much confirm that the 2011 Seahawks game was the Johnny Knox game because I feel like it was at the tail end of that run when Cutler got hurt against the Chargers when he was having like an MVP season. And look at the Bears are going to get back to the NFC Championship game.
So by Johnny Knox game, you mean the game where he got hit and his head touched the back of his feet?
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Yes.
He basically broke his spine.
Right. There's like a classic Simpsons episode from like 1993 during their golden era when it's that episode where, you know, Homer's a shitty dad to Bart. So Bart goes out and gets a big brother. It's voiced by Phil Hartman. And then, of course, Homer, you know, sophomorically gets his own little brother to sort of compete with him. And at one point, there's a showdown between Homer and Bart's super cool big brother, and they get a knockdown dragout fight. And at the end, Tom, I think his name was, gives a punch to Homer, who standing in front of a fire hydrant falls backwards, and then his head ends up like the top of his head ends up just making an arc, like a St. Louis arc, over the fire hydrant. And Homer just says, "This is more painful than it looks." And that's always kind of how I pictured the Johnny Knox injury. The only other thing I'm going to add, because somebody's going to mention this, whether it's Andrew Peck or Kyle, our old buddy, I think you mentioned it before. This was at the tail end of when the Bears had lost those games against the AFC West, and all they had to do was squeak out one or two games with Caleb Haney, and they lost them all. And like the season was already lost. And the only thing I'm going to say, poor old Johnny Knox, is that he wouldn't have gotten hurt if he caught the pass. And that I said maybe some regrettable things in a group text about, my thoughts on Johnny Knox.
Well, let's see what happens.
I don't know. I don't know.
Third and six.
Chris Myers.
Haney's pass. Johnny Knox.
Fumble.
Ball's loose.
Oh, it doesn't look that bad before the replay.
Seahawks have the football.
So he caught the pass and fumbled. And when he tried to recover the fumble, that's when his head snapped back.
Correct. If he hadn't have fumbled, then he'd still be alive.
I mean, how bad could he have broken his back? He's touching his head. It can't be that bad.
That's what I was talking about earlier. You have an opportunity to make a play. It's a terrific throw from Caleb Haney. It comes out on time. Watch him throw right in between the corner.
Terrific throw from Caleb Haney.
Right there, Cam Chancellor.
Oh, my God.
The other safety gets his hand knocks it out.
By Hargrove.
I don't know if I can look at that again.
Hargrove nails Johnny Knox right in there. You can't see from
I'm
that.
Glad.
Hey, right there. Hey there. Oh, there.
Well, I'm glad it was obscured. The other angle was
I don't know who
obscured.
The other announcer was. Was that the great
that is
was
almost,
that the great the other
know.
Tim Ryan? Is that who the
I
other
think,
guy
yeah,
was?
Yeah, one of the guys, like along with the aforementioned Tank Johnson and Shea McClellan, sullied Dan Hampton's number 99. I don't know that I've ever actually seen that play because I was listening to it. I was in Michigan, and of course,
well,
the Lions
were listening
on,
to
but
it.
I got it on
then
the radio.
You don't know what happened because
I know,
it was Jeff Joniak.
That's right.
You thought he caught it, he thought he scored a touchdown.
I just know that I had no sympathy for him without knowing the extent of his injury.
So he makes the catch. He gets the ball knocked out of his hands. And the ball kind of bounces backwards. So he goes to dive for it. And Anthony Hargroves is heading.
Sprinting.
He's heading left to right on your radio dial. And Johnny is heading right to left. And Johnny's neck starts going in the opposite direction.
It's almost Theismann-esque. Jeez.
Yeah. I don't watch it now because Johnny. He missed the. That was it, right? That was the end.
He never played another snap in the NFL.
But as far as we know, he has use of his legs again.
and the Bears lost. They'd lose one more game to the Packers. They went on a five game. They were 7-3, and then they lost five in a row. And this Seahawks game was the fourth of those five, which I think they were already sort of just about out of it. They were certainly in the hunt. But losing that game then was, you know, that was it. And no more waiting around for Cutler to come back. We're not going to the playoffs this year.
So they would next play in 2012 at beautiful Soldiers Field. And the Bears are 8-3. The Seahawks are 6-5. And the Bears, they score first. Earl Bennett, 12 yards from Jay. A couple of Vandy stars hooking up there.
We mentioned this game, actually. I remember this is basically Lovie's last stand.
Yeah.
And also the emergence of Russell Wilson.
He kind of
arrived. They tied it because they had they were down seven whole fucking points inside their own five with 2 minutes to go in the game. I'm sorry, are you early in the set? You're not in the fourth quarter. You're just going through from the beginning?
Yeah.
Okay,
so anyway, it was the Bears were up 14-10 after Matt Forte caught a 12-yard pass from Jay. Oh, which reminds me. That's nothing like doing this podcast in order. Talked about, so people remember if you remember the 2010 Seattle game at all, we were all traumatized by the Packer games. We remember that. We remember B.J. Raji and Jay getting hurt and all that bullshit.
Jonathan Quinn.
If you remember anything about the Seattle game, you remember the Bears getting off to the early lead, and then you remember the snow, because it snowed then.
Yes.
And it would kind of snow in the championship game. Of course, it had snowed in the championship game in 06.
And
it's Chicago in the winter. It snows. What you might not remember is one of the things that spurred the mini Seahawk comeback was an interception. And you're like, an interception? You just read Jay's stats. He didn't throw an interception? No. Matt Forte did.
Oh.
Up 28-0, or maybe 28-7, the Bears went wildcat, even before it was a thing. And Forte had nobody open, and he's standing back there like he's, you know, fucking, he's patting the ball like he's Dan Marino. And he throws a horrible interception. So that's what I remember about that. Okay, so anyway, my digression to Matt Forte's terrible pass. I was only reminded. So yes, so in the 2012 game, Forte catches a touchdown pass from Jay, makes it Bears go 14-10 in the third, and then a ghost of Bears future of this, but past now, I guess. Golden Tate catches a 14-yard touchdown pass from Russell Wilson with 24 seconds to go to put Seattle up 17-14. But Robbie Gould makes a field goal at the horn to tie it, and we go to overtime.
So the drive I just referenced earlier is that, I had forgotten that Wilson left enough time. So they were actually down four. So I remember thinking they had a first and goal, like, inside their own 10, and they just – Wilson, he arrived this game. He moved them down the field, and he did it quickly, and they took the lead. And Gold saved their bacon, but it didn't matter. As soon as Russell Wilson got the ball, Wilson was starting to feel it. This was like a very much of a departure. The Bears were 8-3. They'd lose a few games after. Seattle would go all the way to the conference title game before back-to-back Super Bowls. I feel like this was a sort of a departure point for both teams, this game.
So I had to look up how the Bears ended up scoring. So
it was a huge pass, actually, from Cutler. Cutler completed some ridiculous 50-yard pass to somebody to put them in. Because, we thought
Brandon
the game
Marshall.
Was over.
56 yards to Brandon Marshall with 9 seconds to go. Then they ran Matt Forte once, called timeout with 3 seconds to go, and Gold made a 46-yard field goal.
That's right. It just came back to me that Cutler actually almost pulled that game out of the water. This was on the defense, this game, and it was actually a sign that, like, Urlacher et al. Were getting a little bit long in the tooth, I think.
Well, they would hand the defense over to Mel Tucker the next year and blame him for how bad the defense was.
As we said, between the 1995 and 2013 Bears teams, those are two teams that a less-than-stellar defense probably kept them from making the playoffs. Only two times that's probably happened.
So here's an interesting thing. On the Russell Wilson touchdown pass to Golden Tate, replay had to confirm whether or not the Tate broke the plane of the goal line, and they said that he did.
I kind of remember that.
Seattle gets the ball to start overtime.
Yeah, Bears never see the ball again, do they?
No, they go on a very long, slow drive. So with because this was 15-minute overtime, not 10-minute overtime.
Right.
And with 7 minutes and 40 seconds to go, so they'd held the ball for almost half the overtime already, Russell Wilson threw a 13-yard touchdown pass to Sidney Rice, and the replay had to confirm that Sidney Rice had broken the plane.
So I think that they had implemented the new rule where you had to score a touchdown or the game continues, but didn't lop off the 5 minutes, right? Like, that's kind of been an evolving...
Yeah, they cut off the 5 minutes basically to try to shorten.
Right. But I think the whole idea of where if you get the... And each team's respect the first drive, they have to score a touchdown or whatever. The first team hit. If they score a touchdown, they win. But if they only get a field goal, the game continues. I think that was in effect here in 2012. So it was like, yeah, just hold them to a field goal. And they couldn't. The defense just... They were done. This was the beginning of the end for Lovey. This is one of the last games he would coach because they went in the skids second straight year. They just sort of hit the skids in November and missed the playoffs. And even though they finished 10-6, that would cost Lovey his job.
All right. So the next time they would play is I'm going to say something that people are going to be like, oh, come on, it's the Bears. How could it be? Is one of, maybe, it might be the worst offensive game in Chicago Bears history. And think about that.
Given
the exciting offenses that they've rolled out over the years. This would have been a John Fox special in 2015. In Seattle. Okay. Jimmy Clausen getting the start for an injured Jay Cutler. Unlike the fact that in Mark Trestman's second to last game, he had gotten the start just to prove that his offense worked, that Jay just wouldn't make it work, and Jimmy was terrible and got hurt.
I think our old friend Kyle pointed out that had Trestman not messed with that Cutler would have finally at least gotten the monkey off our back and that stupid benchmark.
Okay, so the Bears lose the game 26-0 in what's now CenturyLink Field, but that doesn't even justice. Let's look at the box score. Jimmy Clausen, 9 of 17 for 63 yards. He was sacked twice, lost 15 yards. That means he had a net total of 48, which is 47 yards more than Justin Fields had against the Browns this year. So how could it be worse, you ask? Well, how about this? The Bears had the ball on 10 different drives in the game. This is how their drives went. 3 plays, minus 6 yards, punt. 7 plays, 37 yards. Hey, pretty good. Punt. 3 plays, 7 yards. Punt. The big drive of the game, 11. They started at their own 8. 11 plays, 47 yards. Punt. 6 plays, 14 yards. Punt. 4 plays, 14 yards. Punt. 3 plays, minus 14 yards. Punt. 3 plays, 9 yards. Punt. 3 plays, 8 yards, punt. And finally, 3 plays, 5 yards, punt. They had the ball 10 times, and they punted every single time.
I just want to say, hearing that makes me happy with my decision to just black out of the John Fox era, because... pretty brutal. I'm looking up. I have some other games that are springing to mind. I'm wondering if that is one of the. Would they have a total? I mean, so they never. They only punted, even at the end of the halves.
Yep.
They did not.
They were never even close enough in a game. They were being blown out to just go for it on fourth down. They could never even do that. They rushed for 98 yards. They passed for 63.
Okay.
So they had 146 total yards. Seahawks had 371. They did not turn it over, as you said, because they punted every time. Pat O'Donnell, player, he got a game ball, I'm sure, and he also probably went on the injury list with a very, very tired leg. Punted 10 times for 477 yards. 47-yard per punt average, a long of 72. Way to go, Pat. The best thing about your team not moving the ball is you get to just boom it. You never have to try to pin somebody inside the 10. You're way too far away. You just kick that fucker as hard as you can every time.
So, like, the only game that springs to mind when you kind of go over that so I don't know where this is going to compare, but I'm pulling it up, is that Bears 49ers game, which was like the last death rattle of whatever is left of Cade McNown's career in late 2000, which we talked about, happened to be Jerry Rice's last home game at Candlestick Park, but then Terrell Owens upstaged him by catching 20 passes against the Bears, which showed how porous the Bears defense was. But what was most noteworthy about that game was that Cade McNown and the Bears offense were unable to cross midfield. Yeah. And when I look at the offensive numbers in the game, I'm going to say that game was statistically worse because the Bears had 39 rushing yards and 65 net pass. They had 104 total yards. So that game is actually worse yardage wise, but that's pretty goddamn incredible, this Clawson game. It's probably, they're probably similar. I'm sure the Bears punted just about every possession. That definitely ranks up there. And that, you know, we're dealing with a franchise that has had plenty of low bars.
Well, in this game, the Bears only crossed the 50 once. it was on a possession where they got the ball on their 8. And they gained 47 yards. They got to the Seattle 45. Woo! How do you not go for it on that one? You're already down at the time. I guess they were only down 3-0. That's why. So they're not going to.
Okay.
They were going to punt there. They're going to pin them, and then they go. Then the defense is going to take over, huh, John?
Adam. Well, this is the good news. This was only John Fox's first year, so yeah. You know, things are going to get better, right?
Yeah. That was better, the first. Actually, John Fox's last year was better than this current season.
Okay. So
that
actually
was bad.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. You're right.
But absolutely. It was better. So actually, here's a good Seattle tie-in. So the Bears game against the Browns, in which they had a net of 47 yards.
Yep.
And it's funny. I went to Google it, and it filled it in because I've clearly already Googled it. Fewest yards gained in an NFL game ever. The Seattle Seahawks. In November 4th, 1979, their total yardage for a game against the Rams was -7.
Wow.
Going to be tough to beat.
Jack Youngblood was all over the place. Well, there. We got a nice little Seattle factoid in there. They're the proud owners of the most inept offensive performance in any one single NFL game. So that Bears, that Browns game this year, does that rank it with the ones we just dug up? Because that was pretty bad, right? They barely had 100 yards net yards in that game, I thought.
In which game?
And then the Bears Browns game this year, right? You
47
reference. Oh Jesus! So that was worse. That set a new bar, at least at least amongst the ones that we're talking about. And then, I don't know, I mean, not surprising that I might reference another one from the Matt Nagy era, but didn't they have that Saints game? Or is that more like the pathetic thing about that Saints game was that they only threw, like, they only ran the ball 3 times.
That's
seven
it.
Times
it was
something.
Their rush. They didn't even try to rush the
okay.
ball.
So it wasn't like, okay, but I can't imagine.
Is that when they lost in overtime? They lost that game to New Orleans in overtime. Okay, so here's another nice parallel. So we said that Dick Geron's first win was against Seattle. Is that correct?
Dick Geron's first win was against the Chiefs. Then he lost against Seattle. Mike Holmgren's first win as a Seahawks coach was against the Bears.
Oh.
Was it Foxy? No, Fox lost to them.
Okay, so there wasn't anybody. I just said it wrong. Anyway, Matt Nagy's first career win was against the Seahawks.
So this is the last game before Sunday, right?
Yep.
I'm only going to tell you that I don't know who the Cubs were playing that night, but I just, you know, the Bears won.
September 17th, 2018.
Yeah. I was watching whatever and this was the Cubs season, of course, they got run down by the Brewers in that frustrating 18 season. But I was definitely watching the Cubs game and not the Bears game because I didn't care about the Bears. I knew Trubisky. I mean, I cared about the Bears, but like I was more interested in the Cubs staying alive. I'm like, why am I wasting my time watching the Bears? But they won, and some people expected them to win. And, you know, 2018 was another one of those fun years. It seems like the Bears don't make the playoffs much, but it does seem that whenever they do, they tend to play the Seahawks during that season's regular slate of games.
Kyle Hendricks and the Cubs beat Patrick Corbin and the Diamondbacks 5-1.
There you go.
Hendricks
boy,
almost
Kyle.
Threw a complete game. The great tiny face Justin Wilson had to come in to get the final out.
Beautiful. Chuck's kids got to make sure you post that one so Brandon can see it. But that was Monday Night Football, though, right? That was a Monday Night game. That was Monday Night Bears-Seahawks game.
Yes.
In Soldier Field. Yeah. That's all I can tell you.
The Cubs were in Arizona, so it would have started a little later. Would have started after the Bear game.
So I probably started watching the Bears game, and then I turned it off, and then, hey, look at that. The Bears won. And then, you know, again, that was a season the Bears would keep winning. I don't have too many of those, so I try to remember them. Try to hold them dear to my heart.
A great first-round place kicker made a 50-first-round draft pick. Place kicker made a 56-yard field goal at the end of the second quarter for Seattle.
It was Janikowski?
Sebastian Janikowski.
Riding out
he was as wide as he was tall by then, too. Which
yes.
Great.
He almost justified Al Davis investing a first round. He had a great pro career.
Yeah, he had a good career.
Maybe it was just good career.
Anthony Miller caught a 10-yard pass from Mitch. Prince Amukamara had a 49-yard interception return for a touchdown. And that's about it. The Bears won 24-17.
It is kind of funny to see how quickly the Bears' fortunes changed. That was another, that was the front end of what we were hoping to be another ascension. And it was only 3 years ago. And now it's like completely in tatters.
Yeah.
When the next time they meet. Like, since they met, the Bears hadn't even ascended yet. We didn't know what they were. And they have since reached some heights, some potential, and then disappointed, and then completely. They have reached depths now that, we've seen this before, but the current Bears iteration is about as low as they've ever been in our lifetime. It's shades of 1999. It's shades of before they hired Ditka after the 81 season. And it's almost it's arrestingly noticeable how quickly that happened, because they only faced the Seahawks 3 years ago, and they were, they were yet to experience this brief burp of success before just completely plummeting to being one of the worst teams in the league. So cheers.
So this would have been if things had happened a little differently in the offseason, this would have been Russell Wilson's first game against his old team. Russell playing for the Bears, of course, because they were one of the teams he was willing to be traded to. And the Bears
that would have been the idea.
And the Bears made some sort of trade offer, which sounds like they tried to trade all the guys they had to cut because of the salary cap, like Kyle Fuller.
I thought maybe it'd be like a box of Virginia's ribbon candy, maybe.
She may have thrown that in. She might have thought that was a little too steep to include that. All right. We can't give everything up, guys. But instead, you're going to get a lot of Justin Fields, Russell Wilson comparisons.
Comps? Yeah. I'll take him.
Russell Wilson has been a great NFL quarterback, and Justin Fields is like a actual NFL-sized version of Russell Wilson.
Thank you. Yeah. Is Russell Wilson, has he achieved the heights of becoming the Seahawks all-time leading passer? Do we know? We already went over the runners. We got Sean Alexander. Is it Matt Hasselbeck? I think the question is Matt Hasselbeck or Russell Wilson? I don't think Dave Craig was there long enough to rack up to have stood the test of time. Dave Craig may have been the
right
time.
It's Russell Wilson. He's got 36,404 yards.
Jesus.
I don't know how many. Let's see how many the Hass had.
Oh, well, you do that. I'm gonna look up the tiny handed Dave Craig.
Hasselbeck, 29,434. Dave Craig was third. Jim Zorn was fourth. So the guys you would expect are one through four on their
list. So, of course, the Seahawks, who have only been around.
See if you can guess who number five is on the all-time. He was the number two pick in the draft.
Oh, Rick Meyer?
Yes. Wani's buddy. Rick Meyer is number five at 9,094 yards. The guy who Dennis Erickson actively tried to ruin his career, and he mostly succeeded, but then Wani finished it off.
That's ridiculous that Meyer actually
Meyer had a great rookie year. Yards. He was better than Drew Bledsoe as a rookie. And then Erickson came in and basically said, all right, I don't want this fucker, and we're not doing any of this shit. And they stopped running anything that Tom Flores was running. And Rick Which is ironic now because one of the top quarterbacks in the high school class of, I think, 2022, so next year's class, is Rick Meyers' kid.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes, that's how old we're all getting.
Well, I know that, but all right. So I looked up Dave Craig. By the way, his career, Dave Craig, because he played for the Bears, multiple teams, Lions. I remember him playing. He took the Lions to the playoffs, I want to say, but he threw in his career for over 38,000 yards. We all know already that the Bears' mark is 23,000 something with Jay Cutler, who barely eked past Sid Luckman with six, seven ultimately disappointing seasons. However, Dave Craig with the Seahawks, you said he's third. And I can tell you, because I'm looking at it now, he finished with a total of 26,132 yards. So basically, the Seahawks, who have only been in existence for 45 years, have not one, not two, but at least three quarterbacks who have thrown for more yards while wearing the Seahawk uniform than the Chicago Bears. So, ever, who have been around for 101 years. And you know what? I'm going to look up Jim Zorn, because, I mean, if Craig cleared the Cutler bar by 3,000 yards, it's entirely possible that Jim Zorn, the Seahawks may have actually had four quarterbacks with more career passing yards with them than anybody with the Bears.
So, yeah, and Rick Meyer updates, you want to feel even older. His older son, Morrison, plays lacrosse at Notre Dame and is a grad student.
Jesus Christ.
But his younger son has already been offered a scholarship by Michigan. Well, you got to put an end to that. Future Notre Dame or future Bear coach Jim Harbaugh. He won't be around, Charlie. You can sign there if you want, but he's coming to the Bears.
He'll be president of football operations. By the way, Jim Zorn just over 20,000 yards with just the Seahawks. So they're through one 10-game stretch of having four quarterbacks with more passing yards. The Bears.
If you know the way COVID is going right now, Jim Zorn might have to suit up and play on Sunday. And then how many yards he said he needs?
3,000.
Yeah, that's possible against this Bears team.
He might be good for it. I think he can do it.
All right, so there we go. That's we hit most of the 18 games in the history of this.
I think we did.
I hate to call it a rivalry because it's not really, but it's this matchup.
It's not.
We have fond memories of the Seahawks, mostly because the Bears have beaten them in the playoffs twice.
Right, which washed away memories of Bob Avellini's interception and ruining Walter Payton's last regular season home game and Mike Holmgren up to some hijinks with a mediocre team that still beat a mediocre Bears team. That's pretty much it.
So, let's see. Next week is the Giants.
Yeah, an original. A charter franchise, like the Bears.
So, we'll see what we do for that one. We, as you pointed out to me, we had some really good Bear-Giants stuff in last year's pod. So, we may...
I don't want to
call it a rerun. I may just repackage some of it. Maybe add a few new insights to it. But
right. It's over the house of the network. Did not air first run episodes back on like the must see TV days, something for your holiday listening. I mean, I don't know how much more we can add. I think we've broken down. I like the idea of breaking down games, which we do sometimes when we run out of scouring over a franchise's history. And I think I'm not in the mood to do it now for the Giants, but if they play again next year, maybe we can revisit that 87 Monday night game or something like that. That's always
the
fun
matchup.
To do. But I think
two of the greatest Super Bowl champions of all time. Yeah. Of course, it was Sims and Mike Tomczak.
Exactly. Probably had his greatest NFL game that was his bright spot. But I just happened to listen to it just to see if there's any stones left unturned, and we pretty much covered it even from a historical perspective. And it would
all right. I guess Mike has crapped out on him again. So we'll wrap this one up. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. If not, the outcomes, although I guess in eight of them, we were pretty happy. So yeah, next week it'll be the Giants, and then we do have something special planned again for the Vikings, the final week. We're going to look back at the Jim McMahon game, the Thursday night game on ABC when he came off the bench and threw the consecutive touchdown passes to bail out the Bears. So you got that to look forward to. So anyway, for everybody out there, have a Merry Christmas. And we will see you again here, or you will listen to us again here next week. Thanks a lot.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have herpes.